Hello everyone, welcome to your weekly tech update. I'm your tech fanboy, Ray McNeil. This is where we showcase the newest, coolest, and most exciting side of tech available on the interwebs. Coming up on the program today, Nike's self-lacing sneakers are turning into bricks after a faulty firmware update. A Japanese spacecraft has successfully touched down on an asteroid. And happening in this week's What The? A burglar drops a 400-pound safe in a parking lot while trying to flee the scene of a robbery. That and a whole lot more coming up on today's edition of your weekly tech update next. Hi everyone, Nike users are experiencing some technical difficulties in the wild world of connected footwear. Nike's $350 Adapt BB sneakers are the latest in the company's line of self-lacing shoes, and they come with the Nike Adapt app for Android and iOS. Now the problem, the app pairs with the shoes and lets you adjust the tightness of the laces, customize the lights, yes, there's lights, and see how much battery life is left in the shoes. But the Nike Android app doesn't work. Android users all over the world report that their new kicks aren't pairing with the app properly, and some customers report failed firmware updates for the shoes, which render them unable to pair with the app at all. Nike's app on Google Play has been flooded with one-star reviews recently to respond to the faulty update. Now, calling a smart shoe that can't use its smarts features a brick? Well, might seem a little extreme, but keep in mind, with no manual laces, you need to trigger the self-lacing feature to tighten the shoes around your feet. If the firmware update fails and you can't lace up your shoes anymore, well, they're kind of useless, aren't they? Pretty much like a brick. In response to the reports on Google Play, Nike said, "We are aware of the issue and are actively working on a solution." I've been looking forward to this one for a long time. Samsung first teased its foldable phone back in November. They've actually been talking about it for years, and the company's Galaxy Unpacked event just recently happened, and they gave us further details of their foldable plans, including the name of their new phone. It's going to be called the Samsung Galaxy Fold. And the company is revealing more about what's inside this smartphone and what exactly it can do. It's planning to launch on April 26th, starting at $1,980 through AT&T and T-Mobile in the US, with a free pair of Samsung's new wireless earbuds thrown in. There will be both an LTE and a 5G version of the Galaxy Fold, and Samsung is even planning on launching the device in Europe on May 3rd, starting at about 2,000 euros. Samsung is using a new 7.3-inch Infinity Flex display that allows the phone itself to have a tablet-sized screen that can be folded to fit into your pocket. How cool. The main display is a QXGA Plus resolution, and when it's folded to a smaller 4.6-inch screen, it's got an HD Plus resolution. This thing is a beast. Samsung is using 512 gigabytes of Universal Flash Storage 3.0 for faster speeds. This comes alongside a Qualcomm 7-nanometer octa-core processor and 12 gigs of RAM. Samsung has even built two batteries for its Galaxy Fold that are separated by the Fold, but combined in the Android operating system to represent a total 4,380 milliamp hours of battery power. Samsung has built a sturdy backbone to the device with a hinge system that has multiple interlocking gears. All of these gears are hidden under the rear of the device, so you're never actually going to see them. It looks pretty sleek, and it allows the Galaxy Fold to transform from tablet to phone modes. Samsung says it's able to fold at least 200,000 times, which, if you work it out, is about 5 years if you fold it 100 times a day. At the rear of the device is a triple camera system for some reason. It's going to be used for both tablet and phone modes. There's a 16 megapixel ultra wide camera alongside a 12 megapixel wide angle and a telephoto camera at the rear, and a 10 megapixel cover camera for selfies in the front. Samsung is also creating four different colors for the Galaxy Fold, but it's the main tablet display that's key here. Samsung is allowing the Galaxy Fold to run three apps at once on this Android device, and it's using an app continuity system to adjust those apps when you move between tablet and phone modes. This thing is awesome. Apps like WhatsApp, Microsoft Office, and YouTube have all been optimized for this new display and modes, and Samsung has been working with Google to ensure Android 9 fully supports this display. Samsung isn't the only smartphone maker creating a foldable device, but it's certainly one of the first to make it widely available. Xiaomi teased its own foldable phone recently. That looked like, the best concept that we've seen so far. Huawei is also reportedly planning to release a foldable handset sometime this year, and Lenovo has started to tease its own prototype. LG has also been developing flexible OLED displays and TVs that roll up into a box. If all these manufacturers progress towards shipping a device like Samsung, then expect to see a lot of foldable phones in 2019 and well beyond. Litho is reportedly ready to show the world what it's been building, an innovative finger-worn device that provides control over various spatial interactions and should find applications ranging from augmented reality to virtual reality to the smart home and the control of other Internet of Things devices. The next stage for Litho is to offer the controller and access to its SDK to developers who join the startup beta program for $199. Computing is increasingly structured around the real world rather than the desktop, says Litho's Nat Martin. With the advent of smart devices such as lights, thermostats, and door locks, physical things are becoming digitally connected. Equally, the advent of AR, digital things are becoming physically anchored in the real world. These are two sides of the same coin. Digital interactions are entering physical space. However, the status quo is for the smartphone to be the primary interface for these spatial interactions. But smartphones were designed to interact with 2D content on screens and are therefore struggling to make the leap. To solve this problem requires a combination of hardware and software. While the Litho device itself is described as an unobtrusive finger-worn controller that connects via Bluetooth low energy to a smartphone or AR headset, the controller has a capacitive touch surface on the underside, which allows for precise 2D input, scrolling, and tapping. But more specifically, it also has an array of motion sensors and provides haptic feedback. The Litho SDK uses the popular 3D game development platform Unity, and Martin says developers will be able to make apps that can not only identify the direction or vector in which the wearer is pointing, but what they are pointing at in the real world. Litho has already picked up a number of notable investors. The startup has raised an undisclosed amount of seed funding from U.S. venture firm Graycroft, Paul Heaton, an early investor in Unity and Supercell, and Chris Albinson, who co-led investments in DocuSign, Pinterest, and Turo, along with several other unnamed angel investors. Around 200 million miles away from Earth, a Japanese spacecraft just grabbed a tiny sample of dirt off the surface of an asteroid. The second time humanity has ever pulled off such a feat. The precious samples are destined to come back to Earth, where they will be analyzed by scientists. This scrutiny could tell us a great deal about the chemical makeup of these rocks, as well as what materials were present in the early days of the solar system. The spacecraft in possession of the newly acquired asteroid material is Hayabusa 2, operated by the Japan Japan Aerospace Exploration Agency, or JAXA. It's the successor of JAXA's original Hayabusa mission, which was the first to return samples of an asteroid to Earth in 2010. Launched in 2014, Hayabusa 2 traveled through space for 3.5 years, arriving at an asteroid named Ryugu in June of 2018. Ever since then, Hayabusa 2 has been hanging around Ryugu, analyzing its surface and practicing for the big sample grab. The spacecraft fired its engine, initiating the vehicle's slow descent to Ryugu's surface. Then, when Hayabusa was hovering just above the asteroid, it tapped a horn-like appendage onto the ground. As soon as that happened, a bullet-like projectile within the horn shot outward, stabbing the asteroid and creating a bunch of dust and fragments. If all went well, some of those fragments fed up into the horn and gathered inside a little chamber inside the spacecraft. Hayabusa 2 is hoping to bring back between 10 and 100 milligrams for study. However, it's not clear exactly how much sample material the spacecraft scooped up. JAXA doesn't have a way to measure how much material Hayabusa 2 collected. However, the agency says that every maneuver went according to plan, and that Hayabusa 2 issued the command to shoot its bullet as expected. That makes them all but certain that the spacecraft has some samples in its belly. If all goes well, the two different asteroid samples will be heading back to Earth in the years ahead, and these pieces could hold clues about the early history of the solar system and even our own planet. Scientists believe that some of the earliest building blocks of life, such as carbon, hydrogen, and other organic materials, may have come to Earth on ancient asteroids. Finding this material on the rocks circling our solar system could mean that life is possible in other worlds very close by. A group of around 50 Microsoft workers signed a letter demanding that the company cancel its nearly $500 million contract with the U.S. military to license its augmented reality HoloLens technology for use in military combat and training. The letter addressed to Microsoft's CEO and president was initially circled internally and is now being released publicly. It takes issue with the use of Microsoft's technology to increase the lethality of warfare, arguing that it turned combat into a simulated video game and is further distancing soldiers from the grim stakes of war and the reality of bloodshed. Microsoft plans to release a new version of the HoloLens augmented reality headset sometime soon. The employees' objections are also reflective of a larger tech won't build it movement by tech workers who are demanding a stop to what they feel are morally questionable uses of their company's products. Employees at Google were successful in helping pressure the company to drop its defense project with the Pentagon in June, as well as getting the company to halt plans to build a censored version of its search product in China, called Project Dragonfly. That was back in December. This isn't the first time Microsoft employees have raised concerns either about government uses of its technology. Last June, hundreds of employees signed a petition demanding that the company drop its contract with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And in October, a group of employees called for the company to cancel its $10 billion project to build cloud services for the Department of Defense. Employees' efforts have been unsuccessful so far in getting the company to drop those contracts. While Microsoft has encouraged regulation and ethical debates over the use of facial recognition technology, it has recently doubled down on its support for selling its technology to the U.S. military and government agencies. We believe in the strong defense of the United States, and we want the people who defend it to have access to the nation's best technology, including from Microsoft, wrote Smith in a corporate blog post in October. In addition to the demand to cancel the U.S. military contract, the letter also calls for the company to cease developing any and all weapons technologies, draft a public statement saying so, and create an external review board to enforce and validate the matter. The latter acknowledges that a review process already exists at the company for ethics in AI called Aether, but the writers argue that the process is opaque to Microsoft workers and clearly not robust enough to prevent weapons development. Over 100 Microsoft employees have signed the letter as of Friday evening. It remains to be seen if Microsoft workers will be able to change the company's stance on this matter. How exciting! A Virgin Galactic rocket plane on Friday soared to the edge of space with a test passenger for the very first time, nudging British billionaire Richard Branson's company closer to its goal of suborbital flights for space tourists. Virgin Galactic's chief astronaut instructor, Beth Moses, who will train future space tourists, joined pilots on board Spaceship Two's VSS Unity to evaluate the customer experience and cabin. This is what we're here to do. We're here to fly people in the back of our spaceship. That's what it's all about, said pilot David McKee, who is now the first Scottish-born astronaut. So for me, it was an important step towards that operation, he said. The White Knight 2 carrier airplane took off soon after 8 a.m. local time from the Mojave Air and Spaceport in California. It released the Spaceship Two passenger craft at an altitude of about 44,000 feet, and then the spaceship was catapulted to 55 miles above Earth. The reusable Spaceship Two craft previously flew to an altitude of more than 51 miles in December, marking the first U.S. commercial human flight beyond the atmosphere since the end of America's shuttle program back in 2011. Hundreds of spectators, including Virgin Galactic ticket holders and CEO Georgia Whitesides, gathered on a clear morning in the desert to watch this latest test flight. The flight was postponed from Wednesday due to winds. They were fine on Friday, obviously. We're in the 50th anniversary year of Apollo, and just like they had to do each step, we have to expand the envelope and do something more, Whitesides told the crowd. Moses, now the first woman to fly on board a commercial space vehicle, called it an indescribable ride, adding, Richard, you're going to love this. Branson is racing against competitors such as Blue Origin, the space business of Amazon.com, founder Jeff Bezos, and Elon Musk's SpaceX to bring tourists into space. Branson said he has plans to be the first passenger on Spaceship Two's first commercial flight in mid-2019. More than 600 people from 58 countries, including actor Leonardo DiCaprio and pop star Justin Bieber, have paid or put down a deposit to fly on one of Virgin's suborbital flights. Some of Virgin Galactic's ticket holders have been waiting over 14 years for their trip. If the Bixby button on your Samsung Galaxy phone doesn't get much use, you might prefer to make it open, say, another app. Samsung noted the remapping option when it released its S10 lineup this week, but if you have a slightly older Galaxy phone, namely the Note 9 or S9, Note 8 or S8, you can actually customize the button too if your device is running Android Pie. Samsung will enable the Bixby key customization feature with an upcoming software update. You'll be able to open a specific app or run a quick command with a single or double press. While there have been workarounds to reassigning the button, this is a straightforward official way to make it more useful. If you're feeling cheeky, you might even remap it to open Google Assistant or Alexa if you prefer those over Samsung's own assistant. Can a scrappy Israeli nonprofit land on the moon on a $100 million shoestring budget? Well, it recently took the first step as it launched and then set off on a long, long journey to the lunar surface. Until now, only three nations, the U.S., former Soviet Union, and China, have sent robotic landers to the moon. Beginning in 2007, a competition run by the PrizeX Foundation and financed by Google was supposed to spur entrepreneurs to send a privately financed spacecraft there, But the competition deadline passed without anyone taking home the $20 million grand prize. SpaceIL, based in Israel, was one of the finalists and continued its efforts, even though there was no more money to win. Recently, its spacecraft lifted off on board a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket in Florida. The landing is expected to occur in April. Why will it take so long to get there? Well, the spacecraft is taking a very long but fuel-efficient route. Instead of blasting out of Earth's orbit, it will gradually elongate its elliptical orbit until it passes close enough to the moon to be captured by lunar gravity. Sounds fascinating. Then it will spend a few more days making its orbit around the moon more circular before attempting a landing. An instrument built by the Wiseman Institute of Science is to measure the moon's magnetic field as the spacecraft approaches for landing. That information should reveal something about the iron core far below the surface. The rocket will also deploy an experimental satellite for the United States Air Force. The first stage of the SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket itself has launched and landed twice, once in July of 2018 and again in October. Samsung's AI assistant Bixby getting a lot of news this week. It's getting an update on the shiny new Galaxy S10 with Bixby Routines. It's a feature that learns your habits to preemptively launch apps or settings when you're most likely to need them, essentially turning Bixby into a precog. For instance, getting into your car could automatically trigger Spotify or turn on Do Not Disturb mode, while heading to the bed could boot up battery saving modes, or users can program routines manually. Bixby has historically trailed behind competitors, including Google, Amazon, and Apple, when it comes to its virtual assistant technology. Samsung is trying to catch up in 2019. In January, Google announced plans to add Maps, Play, and YouTube to the Bixby ecosystem. Bixby started as a smarter way to use your Samsung Galaxy phone, Samsung said at the time. Today, it is evolving to become a scalable open AI platform that will support more and more devices. Samsung also added 4 new languages to the Bixby database: British English, German, Italian, and Spanish. These join US English, Korean, and Mandarin Chinese. And finally, happening in this week's What The, it was a major fail for a burglar trying to make off with a 400-pound safe. Police discovered the break-in early Thursday morning at a grocery store in Getwell. Employees of Emilio's, who were trying to open for the day, first had to clean up broken glass, fingerprint powder left by police, and the footprints of a lone burglar who broke in overnight. The one thing that made it easier was knowing that the thief didn't get away with what he was after: a large safe left in the middle of their parking lot. Dozens of cameras captured video of the burglar breaking out the glass in the front door and dragging the safe from a back room to the parking lot. But that's as far as he got. We're told surveillance video shows the burglar actually left the store without the safe, came back, circled it several times, and tried to get it inside his vehicle. When police showed up, he took off. The suspect was able to get away, but we're told at one point he took off his mask and they got a good look at him and the vehicle through a security camera. Employees don't think it will take long to hunt him down. Thanks for watching your weekly tech update. If you have a story you think we should feature on the program, you need to shoot me an email, djraymcneil@gmail.com. Find us on Facebook at Your Weekly Tech Update and check out the podcast. Audio and video versions available on iTunes, Google, Spotify, Audio Burst, and elsewhere on the interwebs. Till next time, I'm Ray McNeil. Good night, world.